Blog Talk Radio.
Living Out Loud is hosted by Dr. Frieda Birnbaum, a research psychologist, psychoanalyst, and author of What Price Power, an in-depth study of professional women in a relationship. She's an expert on depression, women's issues, and attaining happiness. Dr. Birnbaum has been featured on Oprah 2020 in some of the biggest TV radio venues in the world. Now, without further ado, here's your host of Living Out Loud, Dr. Frieda Birnbaum.
Hello, everybody. You know, we have a lot of interesting things happening in the news today, one of which is what happened to Bruce Jenner. I mean, my goodness, he's really taken us by a storm here, a big surprise. This masculine figure, this athlete, and even a reality show host, decided that he no longer wants to be masculine. He wants to be feminine. He would prefer to be a woman. So, you know, go figure. What does that mean? Well, you'll be even more shocked to know that what that means is he still wants to have sexual experiences with women. So why go to all this trouble? One would think, anyway. You know, he feels much more comfortable being feminine, and he's had this attitude about it. But, you know, why now? Why is he revealing everything at this age of 64? Why did he wait? Well, I don't know if it's a coincidence, but his show is not doing well. His relationship is he's going through a divorce. And he's losing the momentum in his life. So it could be that he feels what's to lose, or it could be he feels there's an opportunity here for him to be in the news again. He's able to document his transition. Now, I know, of course, no one would go to such lengths to be in the media having a sex change. But then, again, this has been within him for a very long time. And he is going to do this in such a way that he will feel more comfortable transforming slowly into the person that he has always wanted to be. Someone with feminine qualities, yet he will be doing all the masculine things he's done before. So, you know, he wants it all. He wants to be masculine, feminine, have a relationship, a sexual relationship with the same opposite sex he's always had. Today's society, I guess, you can pick and choose. It's called designer sex. And that's my interpretation, a new word that I think seems to go along with what's happening with this situation. And maybe other people will be more comfortable coming out now and going through this type of transformation. So here's another area of sexuality that has most likely been repressed and is allowing other people to say, you know what, it's safe to go ahead and do something like this.
So do you think that
Dr.
Ryan speaking, by the way, and wait, before we even get going, let's let everyone know where people can find out where they can learn more about you. Dr. Frieda, D-O-C-T-O-R, Frieda, Frieda.com. So when you think people go to the site, they can learn, see your upcoming media appearances, see your TV clips.
Yes.
See about your books.
True, they can. Absolutely. Thank you, Ryan. Yes, they can. New book is coming out. And also, I do have motivational speaking appearances that will be coming on my website as well. So, yes, that's what I do. Basically, I'm not looking to build up any practice right now. I'm just doing this media interviewing and analysis of what's going on in the news today. The other thing that's going on in our lives today is, you know, what's happening with the younger generation, and I'm talking about 18 to 34. It's very interesting. They are very frustrated. They're disappointed and they're depressed. And these are usually top students, but they have entered the age of recession. They have difficulty finding work. And the employers prefer older, more experienced people. So what do they do? The ones that do work seem to feel that they have a kinship with the boss, who becomes a mentor, and that keeps them on more than the money that they make. It's more important for them to be loyal to their work. And they also consider happiness, which is more unusual today, more important than their career and money. And by happiness, they mean they prefer relationships and having a family and being devoted to that family as something that they're aspiring for in their own lives. And they don't want 9-to-5. They see themselves in the future as successful and as entrepreneurs. And they also have ways of looking at their lives differently, which means they wouldn't mind working 24/7 if it's for themselves. The problem here is that they often integrate their relaxation with their work life. And that's not good, because you need to keep them both separate. Also, another problem is they have weight issues, and some often become obese. So longevity is at stake, and what's upsetting about that is that that generation may have the possibility of living shorter lives because they are not as active. So this population is different, this generation. They don't believe in government or joining causes, only professional organizations. And also they need instant information because they make instant decisions or they lose interest. But it's very important to know that they are the brightest of the generations and will bring a lot of change in technology. And that's something for us to look forward to, and will also bring a lot of jobs for people who would be working for them. So there's a lot of information about these people, and it's a very exciting time, and we're really looking forward to having this generation who is so technically savvy to make all these wonderful changes for us.
Excellent. Frida, are you ready for your first guest today?
Absolutely.
Okay. Joining us now is addiction specialist and author, Mr. Mark Lipp, who's going to talk with us today about celebrity addiction. It pertains to Bobby Christina Brown and how some people start off with these horrible addictions and how they really can overcome. Mr. Lipp, are you there?
Yes, how are you today? Yes, I'm here.
Hi, welcome to our show.
Well, thank you for having me on today. It's a pleasure to be here.
Our pleasure. So there's a lot going on here with you and the addiction. And do you think a certain type of person has addictive behavior over others?
I think that there is a certain tendency for that. But I think like any addiction, once you start using substances like that, you end up addicted whether you have a predisposition to it or not.
And is this something that you've studied only, or you've experienced this personally?
Oh, I've experienced it. My brother has been a 30-year addict to crack and speed, and my daughter is currently in jail, has been addicted to drugs of some sort since the age of 14, and is now 24.
Wow. So is this genetic?
There is a genetic predisposition in the family. Fortunately, I've stayed away from all of that. And yes, there is a genetic component.
So what would you tell people to do if they wanted to get off of this?
Well, that is the most difficult question to answer, because we know the recidivism rate is very high, especially in the area of cocaine, crack, and of course, heroin. It is very difficult. It's a need-based problem, one that is very difficult to address.
It's very difficult. Addiction and withdrawal is so difficult. So tell us about the celebrities What is different about them and the way they use, you know, drugs?
Well, they have a different take on this. You know, life for them is full of pressure. In many cases, the chase to be famous or continue to be famous is very, very difficult. And they need to be perfect, especially with all the media attention on them today. And in many cases, they just can't live up to the standard that they expect for themselves or society expects. So they end up turning to drugs and alcohol to cope with what they feel may be their failure or could be their failure, or the feeling they just simply might fail, or they have some emotional trauma in their past to escape. And they're also trying to recapture the feeling of euphoria. I mean, nothing could be more euphoric than, in the case of a football player, as we've seen lately, who's been cheered by thousands of people at a stadium, wondering if that's going to continue. And the pain inside them gets, and their own judgment of themselves, it's very difficult. And they turn to drugs to get that kind of euphoric high and relieve themselves from the pressures in their head.
So it's amazing that people that you expect them to really feel that they can celebrate their lives now, that they've made it, are actually having difficulty coping to begin with. And so it just tells us that if they're having this kind of difficulty, you know, what can we do when we have problems? And everybody does have problems, but of course their expectations are so high. I was just wondering, do you think that helps them as celebrities? Do you think that helps them to perform better?
Well, it's been said in many cases, in many musicians, they say they perform better or they actually create better while they're using drugs of some sort. I don't know that
right.
to be true or not, but that is what is said. And, you know, the pressure that's on these kids, if you take somebody like Johnny Manziel, who's currently in the news, there is a young boy in his 20s who is now thrust into the limelight. The pressure must be tremendous. You know, we come up in our careers, we start slowly. We go to college, maybe. We start in our career, and we build our way up. He's thrown from right into the fray of the big leagues right away at 22, 23 years old. The pressure's tremendous for success.
Do you think that's similar to, you know, when we go to parties, we take a drink so we can be part of it and we don't have to feel so self-conscious? Do you think that's the same kind of effect on a bigger scale, to be able to perform without feeling, you know, inhibitions, and then the addiction comes?
Absolutely. Think about when we go to a party and we take that first drink, we start to forget about all the problems that are around us, and we enjoy the moment. And so you're exactly 100% correct, Doctor.
So what we're doing in, you know, mainstream society is something similar, but more acceptable. So getting drunk or getting high, or, you know, just taking some tension off, that is something that can be more done in public without having to hide it. But when you're taking drugs and it could be doing the same thing for you, it's just something that is not acceptable. It's almost saying, you know, you're out of control. You're an addict. It's almost as if it's some kind of criminal behavior when you're really doing the same thing, which is, you know, it's a commentary on how we look at the substances that we take today.
Absolutely. You know, the word addict has been around for a long, long time, longer than the words cancer and AIDS. And when those were dirty words, generations before us, especially AIDS, when we accepted the fact that it was a disease, it didn't become a dirty word anymore. And we were able to find ways to deal with it in society. Addict is still a dirty word. And because it's a dirty word, there's a lot of underground and behind closed doors, and it only comes out much later. We see the final crash of the person. We don't see what built up to it for years.
And that's the problem, because it's hidden. It's something that people are having difficulty about, their image and the stigma that follows taking something that's not acceptable. And then once you find out, it's already often too late. That's something that we really need to look at, and saying that, you know, you can admit to being addicted, or you can admit to be taking these drugs. And once that happens, it could become a little bit more mainstream. And, you know, as you know, marijuana is something that some states are already accepting. What state is that? Is it Colorado? Or what? I know it's medical, a few of them, but this...
Here in California, you know, it's medical marijuana. Colorado, for
medical.
Sure.
Washington
Colorado
also, I think
legal.
It is.
And Washington, that is correct.
Yes, those
well,
places.
Dr. Frieda,
and,
Mr. Lip, I want to... Dr. Frieda,
ahead,
Lip, I want to address a question to both. I want to address a question to both of you guys. This is Ryan. In both of your experiences, what particular drugs do people tend to use to self-medicate? Like, what is a self-medication? If you were to say marijuana, or you say alcohol, or you say cocaine, what does each of those drugs have a common factor in? As to what the people are medicating, what are they trying to heal from, what are they trying to run away from? Do certain drugs take care of certain needs that cannot be, you know, fulfilled without, cannot be fulfilled in real life?
That's a great question, Ryan. And you know what happens with medicating yourself, you have to take something stronger and stronger. So it's not necessarily fitting this designer drug for yourself, because it does change. So, you know, we start with weed and we keep going up, and we start in school and we're smoking we're smoking cigarettes, and it doesn't seem like it's a big deal till you get hooked. And then that's not helping you anymore, so you need something stronger. And then you keep going. And that spiral effect, that changing into stronger and stronger treatment drugs, is really where the problem lies. It's not what you actually start taking, because that never remains the same.
Doctor, that's 100% correct. Most of the people I deal with, families, their children started with alcohol, then to marijuana, and moved up the scale. It's a never-ending battle to find that same high, that same relief from the pain in their head. Like, we take aspirin for a headache, they take drugs and alcohol, and it's an ever-increasing battle to get that same escape mechanism. So you're right, they go all the way up the line and to heroin.
That's okay. True, and you know, it's also environmental as well, because if you have if you're in a home where alcohol is consumed, as if it's a social recreational way to spend your time, then that becomes something that's commonplace. Drugs are also used in the same way, and that often becomes commonplace. But then there's another way of using drugs, and those are for people who are in a lot of emotional pain. Is that right? Just want to make sure that since you did all the research, Mark, that you have a lot of information on this, but isn't that true? That emotional
yes.
pain is a huge factor for this.
Absolutely, doctor. I mean, that is where people end up starting to take drugs. It's the emotional pain that they feel, whether that's from their perception of life or their perception of themselves, they end up starting down that path where, you know, most parents think, well, it's a phase they're going through. We all drank a little bit. We all smoked a little grass in college or whatever. But they end up going down that path because it relieves them of the emotional pain, not just physical, emotional. And that's really where the problem lies, is the emotional pain.
And so what do you think happened here? You know, we have this person in the news. Her mother was very famous, and she ended up in the bathtub drowning, having had taken drugs. And here we're again looking at this situation where she is actually in the same, I think she's in a coma right now, is that right?
Yes.
And she was having been said to have taken drugs as well. You know, I'm talking about Bobby Christina.
Right.
What do you think of that? What do you think is the situation? Is that similar to genetic orientation, or is this something that could be completely separate?
I really believe in this case it's a combination of both. Her father was had problem with drugs. Her mother had problem with drugs. And talk about a talented woman who had everything in her life was Whitney Houston. And the emotional trauma from her mother dying probably compounds that. And then she went through life being the daughter of a superstar. And then she had a few failed attempts at reality TV. And I think she may have had felt the pressure of living up to her mother. And that whole life was gone when her mother passed away. And compound that emotional trauma, the emotional trauma of not having a life anymore, and her mother passing away at a young age. And it was reported in 2012 that she was doing cocaine and having issues with drugs. Well, it went on for a long time, and this is the end result, because you are playing Russian roulette when you're playing with cocaine, heroin, and drugs of that nature. It's six bullets in a chamber. There's only one way out. That's either death, or the other way out is to quit.
And that's very, very hard to do, to quit. You know, you think that people would know that before they get to that point, that the other end is so horrible that the relief they get is nothing in comparison to all the pain that comes afterwards. But then again, as you said, this is addictive behavior, and they don't necessarily think about it. They just want those momentary reliefs and pleasures at that time. So it's too bad that alcohol seems to be a better way to go. Of course, if you don't get too drunk as well and become an alcoholic, I mean, then it's another addictive. I think anything addictive in life, anything too much is too much, I guess, however way you look at it.
Right.
So, you know, it's not a good deal. And we, in our country, we seem to need more and more to make us happy. It's not enough. We need to be happy all the time, and that's a ridiculous statement in itself. We can't seem to find it. It seems to be elusive, and so therefore we look to all kinds of treatments to find that place that, as Freud said, is never consistent and is a fleeting moment. So when you look at it, what would you say, I'm being told I have to wrap it up soon, but this is so interesting, what would you say is the worst case that you have, experienced?
The worst case in my own personal life with my daughter, that would be dealing with an actual overdose, where she actually overdosed and I was rushing her to the hospital. In general, what I deal a lot with, and the worst thing that I see, is not just from the addict, because in many cases, the addict themselves can only help themselves. You can drag them to rehab, and you need to try to do that at all costs. But the damage done to the families around the addict, the infighting and the problems that are caused, the familial damage is absolutely unbelievable. And with 23.5 million people addicted to alcohol and drugs in the United States, and if you call the average family four, then almost 100 million people are affected by the disease of addiction today in the United States alone. And it's a growing problem.
It's a catastrophe. It's an epidemic.
I'm
just wondering, when your daughter is able to be freed, what would you recommend that she does to help her?
Well, I think the best thing I could give her advice is to seek therapy, as I do for those families to seek places like Al-Anon and Al-Anon. And it's really basically changing how you view life. They focus on all the negative aspects of their life, all of the drug addicts who I've talked to, all the family experiences that I have, and it's a way of reprogramming them through, whether it's need-based analysis or just getting them to learn to change their way of thinking, that there is much more positive and good in their lives than the bad, and it's time to be responsible, stand up, and live life like a productive human being, and that's a very tough thing to do.
It's a tough thing. It's easy to say. It's very tough. But, you know, a lot of these people who take this stuff actually do need some kind of a medical intervention, and they may need some kind of therapeutic drug. Serotonin levels are often low, but there are problems that these young people take drugs because it relieves these issues that they have a need for in a way that's immediate. So your daughter also may be needing some kind of medical intervention that is not her fault. It's nothing that she's acting on, but it's chemically related. So that's the way to go. But one thing you said was very important, and that is that the families are affected by this. Do you think these people think about this? How gravely the family... No, and that's something that they need to consider as well. I think this is extremely important for people to investigate further. And, you know, your book is An Addict Within, Mark Lipp. And do you want to give us your website as well so our listeners will know where to find you?
Absolutely. You can find it at anaddictwithin.com, or you can just look up marklipp.com, M-A-R-K-L-I-P-P, and .com. And it is a journey of how parents learn to deal with a child who is an addict and the lessons that I learned and the mistakes that I made in dealing with my own addicted child.
And that's the most important lesson one can learn is from someone who is experienced, and we really need to know more about this. Thank you, Mark. It's been such an interesting interview, and thanks for being on our show.
Thanks. It was a pleasure to be here today.
Thank you. Take care. Be well.
You too.
Thank you.
Dr. Frieda,
good
to hear these stories.
Yeah, it was a very important interview, and really something that people need to have information about, even if they don't have any problems with addiction, because you never know when you can prevent something from coming into your life that is so pronounced in our society today. So it was a really great interview. It was very informed as well. Very easy to listen to. Very nice, Mark.
Some of these people, you know, when you listen to some of these stories and you hear people about how they overcome drugs and addiction, and you work and you see people on a regular basis, I mean, really, when you get to it, what do you find is the main core reason why they do it, why they're out of control, why they take so many things?
Well, there are several things. You know, one that was discussed was sometimes it is medical, and sometimes these people have no choice, and they need treatment, and they need to go to a doctor who will say, look, this is what your body needs to stabilize you, and then be under therapeutic drug treatment. That's one thing. Another thing, you know, people often are not heard. They want a voice, and they don't know how to get themselves into a place of comfort. Especially young people with peer pressure are extremely uncomfortable with each other. And so if you go to a party and everyone's smoking something and you want to be part of it, it's like the adults who are drinking. Well, today it's smoking something instead of alcohol. My generation used to be beer or whatever at parties. So because of that, as the doctor said, what does happen is that you need a higher fix and a higher fix each time when it starts wearing off. And so it's not what you're initially taking that is the problem. It's the fact that you need something stronger, and then the addiction becomes stronger, and it becomes very, very dangerous when you're doing stuff that could really take your life. People have jumped off of buildings and done horrible things without realizing it. So it's a scary situation in our society.
It's pretty bad. Hi, Dr. Frieda, where can people learn more about you?
Well, they're learning about me right now as I speak. I'm with you and a motivational speaker and just, you know, I'm basically out there analyzing the news, the media, and what's happening with the current events today. So they'll hear about me, hopefully, all over the place.
Okay. And they can also check you out at Dr. Frieda, D-O-C-T-O-R, Frieda, F-R-I-E-D-A.com.
That's right. I always forget about that, don't I, for some reason. for some strange reason. I don't
know
why.
Gabriel,
but okay, it's been a
pleasure
talking to you,
Ryan,
as well.
We will be back here again next Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Save it on your calendar.